From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in Reflective, Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk games and game development. I'm Ellen Burns-Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Arthur Croy, I too make nice games.
For this week's episode, our topics are player motivations and copying others. So, if everyone is ready, let's start.
We're back in the building.
Yes.
We almost couldn't make this recording session happen.
Yeah, actually. It's kind of ridiculous.
It is 9:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty late. So listeners may know, we've talked about this in the past, that we generally record two episodes on a recording session.
Yep.
And we often get dinner in between because mm-hmm. we're pals and we like to eat. Mm-hmm. Other reasons, but those are the main ones. And we went out to get some food down the block, and then we come back and the building is locked.
Yeah.
We can't get in with our key fobs. And it was like a little bit of a panic moment because it wasn't just that it wasn't working. It's that it was like dead.
Yeah.
And from where we're sitting, tomorrow is the 4th of July.
Yep.
So it seemed like, okay, can we get kind of building management? What can we do? And there was a whole comedy of errors about it where we were sitting holding our to-go food as the rain clouds were building.
Yeah. It was looking rough.
With all our stuff trapped here in the office. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're good now.
Thank goodness. We're in here.
But we're maybe a little loopy.
Yeah, it's fine.
A bit.
Just a smidge.
It's late and there's some leftover adrenaline.
Yeah, and we're recovering from Origins. Hey.
Yeah.
Transition.
Not really transition. Still meta.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
Not Steven.
Yes, I went with the LaCroix, Mark and Dale, to Origins, and we took their car, their electric vehicle. Did you talk about that on the show yet?
I think we talked in a couple episodes. We talked about our plans. Mm-hmm. And the we're going to road trip to Ohio.
Oh, I meant like, have you talked about your car on the show? Yeah, you have.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Because the scheme is that I get a year of free charging on this network.
Yeah.
So I got to take all the road trips possible. Mm-hmm. Well, it's more effective because like a 13-hour road trip is not a good, you just get a plane ticket unless it's free. And it was essentially free for us to get there.
Right, yeah.
So it really made it worth it.
Yeah.
But it was rough. We didn't get in till 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
Which is like, we knew it was going to be after midnight, but I was hoping we might be able to squeeze in a little earlier than that. Mm-hmm. But it was otherwise good, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, we had a good time.
With three of us changing shifts, it wasn't that rough. Dale and I, and I've described this before, when we did our road trip to California. That's probably when I talked about the car.
Yeah.
It was just the two of us, and it was a three-day trip.
Yeah.
And so that was a lot rougher on the both of us.
Yeah.
But this one, I mean, other than it being later than we'd hoped to get in, it would have been pretty well.
Yeah, the car drives smooth, too.
Yeah.
So that's nice about it. It's so futuristic, y'all.
It's so cool. I sometimes expect you to, like, when you drive away, like, you get in your car and I expect it to take off, not just drive.
Right. Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Or just blink out of existence. And then
it does have kind of a retro future vibe, mm-hmm. with the aesthetic of the car.
Yeah. It's that, that is like my aesthetic, future aesthetic.
Yeah.
Like, I like that look.
Yeah. No, I like it. Anyway, enough about the car.
Enough about the car, yes.
So we got to Origins. Yes. Origins Game Fair. It's, I guess, of the two big conventions, it's the smaller of the two. Gen Con is bigger, but Origins has more days.
Yeah.
And from what I've read, it's a little bit more like publishery pitch, designer pitch to publisher friendly, because it's a little bit less intense. And that definitely bore out. I mean, I've been to Gen Con once before with you, Steven, years ago.
Yeah.
And that is definitely like a lot of people in a huge space, you know, filled up pretty nice. Origins didn't seem as much more cozy, comfortable, but still pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is borne out partly because they spread it out over more days. People will buy like a day pass or whatever.
Yeah.
And so they still get a lot of people. It's just a little bit more maybe reasonably like based.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. No,
but it also is a little bit smaller.
That's how I would describe it too. I think, I don't remember if Gen Con had like it probably does have like a board game library where people could just check out games. And I guess at the time I probably wasn't as into board games as I am now.
Yeah.
Not that much more into board games, but I am into certain board games a lot.
Right.
Spirit Island.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah, we went there for reasons that people have heard about it already, and we'll talk a little bit more. But we also just went to have some fun.
Yeah.
Play some games and check out stuff. And
yep.
pretty good. Yeah. Dale bought a board game. We mm-hmm. didn't go crazy on the show floor, but it was nice to check everything out.
Yeah, we just looked around.
Just for funsies.
Cool art and things.
Yeah, but the one of two big reasons we were there is because it is where GLOM had its kind of unveiling, its premiere. Indie Boards and Cards, our publisher, had it out for sale. Mm-hmm. And they also had, they devoted one of their two demo tables to running GLOM the whole show.
Yeah.
They had a volunteer who was running, who was just super great.
Yeah.
Like, the kind of person you want to run your game at a convention. Very nice. Cool dude.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And every time I walked by and saw people playing, they were all having a blast.
Good.
And we, I don't know if it completely sold out, but when we left, there was still one day left, and Sydney, our rep there, was like, yeah, we only have a couple copies left.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
We think it did okay.
Mm, cool.
Which was nice to hear.
Yeah.
And we got a bit of a sales report from Sydney about how the game is doing, which is pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
It's not a big smash, and didn't crash and burn.
Yeah.
People who know what it's about and have seen it in action will fall in love with it.
Yeah.
Which is great. It's kind of all you can ask for.
Yeah.
Whether it's going to do well enough to get a second printing, that's still up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have some confidence. But it might be a while. It's like a kind of a long tail game, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what the way they were describing it is that GLOM, it's kind of hard to sell it until like somebody has like looked at someone playing it or played it themselves.
Yeah.
Once you see it, then you're like, oh, okay, this is the game for me, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's going to rely on word of mouth and slow build, and it's just got to be on shelves.
Yeah.
And because they, you know, have a retail strategy for it, it's in our local board game store, which was fun to see. It's out in the world. People all over the country and people internationally have bought it.
Mm-hmm.
We see their comments on Board Game Geek and stuff. So
yeah.
It's out there. So it's, you know, I'd like to think that it'll survive on its merits and mm-hmm. on word of mouth. We'll see.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so wild.
It's looking good.
It still isn't, like, we did that.
Yeah.
We may. Well,
well, we talked about this to them at the thing. Like, we're video game people.
Yeah.
Nothing we make is real.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This is finally a real thing.
It's
on a
the
show.
Physical aspect of it that's still
incredible.
Shocking to me.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of, it's like a jump. It's like something, like, what else is going to fall out of my brain, you know? It's like, okay, but there's lots of weird stuff in there. I don't necessarily want to see it all reflected out in the real world.
Right, but make sure to have a nice shelf-sized box that it can fall into.
Yes.
So that you can pack it up and sell it.
Okay. Yeah.
Game store.
I'll try to make that happen. I don't control what happens up here.
Yeah, and speaking of things that fell out of our minds,
yes.
The second thing we were doing at Origins was sort of like soft pitching Dogpile, which we did a whole episode about, what our plans for that. But we're back now. We did it.
Yes.
And I guess it went to plan.
Yeah,
sounds like it.
The plan was not ever to actually pitch at Origins, but we ended up doing it anyways.
Yeah,
the plan was to kind of like hand a sell sheet out to a couple of people and say, we'll email you later.
Yeah.
And that is essentially what happened.
Yeah.
But there was one or two longer conversations where it was proper pitches.
Yeah.
So maybe we got a little ahead of ourselves, but it was in a place to do that.
Mm-hmm.
There's one publisher in particular that we talked to that it went really, really well with. We'll see how any of this goes. They might have just been a really nice person, but they did give me a lot more time of theirs than I was asking for, which was nice.
Hmm.
So it's a good sign. But again, we're new at this, so we don't know what a good sign is necessarily.
Yeah.
So to Gen Con next, earlier today, we sat down and sort of planned out what we want to do for like real proper pitching, which we were going to maybe try to do at Gen Con. So we have some plans for that.
Yeah.
We can talk about that as it gets closer.
Yeah, when we get to it.
But yeah, it did go pretty well.
Yeah. Also, what was at Origins, which is kind of weird, is there's this was it GDEX is what it's called, right?
Yeah, I don't know what it stands for, but it's a video game con. It's like a local video game convention.
Yeah.
Not as big as Origins, but it just takes place in the same convention hall or convention center in a separate hall.
Yeah.
During the same time.
Yeah.
Our pal and yours, guest booker Max, who gets us our guests. He had two games that he was manning the booth for at that show, and he's from Ohio, and so we got to have dinner with him, which was nice, and check out the games he's working on. It was
pretty
really
cool.
Nice.
Some pretty cool games. I mean, we got to see that one game that he's been talking about for forever.
Yeah,
one was Rah Rah Boom.
Yeah,
I think the other one was
Little Nemo and the Nightmare Fiends,
which is based off of like an old cartoon or an old comic, right?
Yeah.
Very old comic. And both of those were cool. I liked them.
Yeah.
They were interesting. Yeah, I'm curious how it will progress further, because we only got demos of them.
And as we understand it, things went really well for the showing, and they made some deals and stuff, and like both those games are doing pretty well.
Yeah,
they're on their way, towards success. I imagine. Mm-hmm. It's pretty exciting. And yeah, so like, I mean, GLaDOS was great. It was cool to show Dogpile to people, and we got to hang out with Max.
Yeah.
So like three big awesome things that happened. Mm-hmm. And then on the way home, Steven, you discovered podcasts.
I mean, I didn't discover podcasts.
Dale insists that we talk about them on the show.
Yes. So yeah, we were driving, and I want something to entertain me. And
as he's driving,
yes, because otherwise, I don't know, it's boring. So
he'll be so bored, he'll just crash into a teleport.
Yeah, and I didn't have my playlist. I have a giant playlist of music that I just listen to when I need something up. But I
kept asking you and Dale, like, what music do you want to listen to? Because I am very quick to be like, I know it. I have music to play. And so I always make sure that somebody else picks some music. Otherwise, I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
And I feel very guilty.
That's the thing, is I just don't have I had one go to, because I've been listening to a Janelle Monáe album.
Yeah.
That just came out. And that's great.
It was good.
Yeah. But like, I didn't want to listen to that. I didn't want to subject you all to that the whole trip. So. So, you know, Dale listens to podcasts, a lot, I guess, and she put up one when she was driving, actually. I think this is what happened. Mm-hmm. No, it was when I was driving. I don't remember. At any rate, she put on this one called, was it Normal Gossip, where they just talk about a gossipy thing. It's like, not rumors per se, but just like they gossip about a thing.
Yeah, it's, I was only half paying attention, but it's kind of like a advice column. Sort of.
Well,
they read out a scenario and then they give their thoughts on it.
Yeah.
From some listener or something.
Honestly, what's interesting to me about it is it's just an outlandish story.
Yeah.
That the podcast hosts are reacting to.
Yeah.
Which is fun. Because I was also reacting while I was listening.
Listener, you should have heard him. opinions and we heard
them
all.
That didn't make any sense. Why were you doing? Yeah, it was fun. So I listened to those. I mean, now since I've been back, I have not listened to a podcast.
Right. You need to get in the habit of it. Mm. But you definitely do. It is funny, listener, Steven, who has been a host of a, I would say, semi-successful podcast for 6+ years, was asking me questions about like, well, why do they put ads in the middle of the show? And how do these theme songs get chosen? And just like basic questions about the form that like you have had a hand in producing.
Uh-huh, yep.
Well, why do we put ads in the middle of the show?
So we can make money.
Does it work?
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
But it really, you just don't listen to any podcast.
I really don't.
Yeah. See, here's the, if you want to listen to more podcasts, you first need to get more plants. Because then
what?
I'll walk you through it.
Okay.
How did we get to here?
No. If you have lots of plants you got to take care of, then the first thing you do is you get up in the morning and you're like, coffee. Yeah. And then you're like, okay, it's plant time. And you play your podcast while you're getting your plants all put together.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And your coffee.
Honestly, Steven, I don't know how you could have played as much Tears of the Kingdom as you have without also listening to podcasts.
You listen to podcasts while you play that game?
I mean, once you get to the point where you're just churning through side missions and looking for shrines. Yeah, throw on 7 podcasts.
Oh, wow. Okay. I do that with some games, but I don't do that with...
I mean, I've heard that stable theme enough.
Yeah, okay. That's fair. they play it a lot. No, I do that with some games, but I don't do that with a lot of games. I oftentimes will feel... guilty is the wrong word. Like, it's not like I'm shaming the devs because they play the music keeps playing over and over again. But, like, I don't know. I think I like getting more immersed in the game a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, like, I like specifically with Zelda.
Yeah. Well,
there's some games when I play a lot and, like, part of it is just, like, a grind.
Mm-hmm.
Then I will, throw on some music. I won't listen to a podcast, though, because I'm just like, I listen. Actually, no, what I do it typically do is I have a stream up or something.
Yeah. So you basically listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
It's kind of the same thing. There's a visual component, but podcasts have visual components sometimes, too.
Yeah.
So.
I think it might be too late for you because you're now against the idea.
Hmm.
And because you're a very stubborn man.
I am.
I feel like there's no amount of, like, you could even agree with the reasoning. You'd be like, but I've already put my flag on my opinion on this.
Yeah, I'm working on that with my therapist.
You got to turn it into a competition, Mark.
Oh, that's true.
How many podcast episodes can you listen to?
You know, there's stats in my podcast player that tells me how many hours I've listened to.
I've learned
it's
to
an
not...
embarrassing number.
Yeah,
but it's higher than yours.
I've learned not to compete in Mark's courts. I'm not doing that.
That's fair. That's
we
fair.
Tried that with the shrines in Breath of the Wild. That did not work in my favor.
That's so interesting. Because, like, if I'm to the point where I need to distract myself from the game, I'm like, it's time for a new game.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, it's like when you're like traveling through the depths and you know you've got like 5 minutes before you reach the next thing you're on your way to.
Yeah.
Like that is boring.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like that is, I mean, we've talked about Tears of the Kingdom. Like, but there are some things, it does a really great job of making you want to keep playing.
Mm-hmm.
But as the more I've played it, the more I'm like, there is tons of things in that game that are just boring.
It's traversing the depths when you're just, when you know where you need to go and there's just, and it's just walking there or whatever. That, I agree with you. It's just, there's nothing exciting on the way because there's just not that much in the depths.
Right, so, right.
I totally see. Yeah, the depths is kind of just weird. I don't know. That's a whole analysis that eventually we'd have to get to.
Yeah.
So,
wow. Okay. I look forward to your opinions on the depths. But you did watch the Spider-Verse movie.
I did watch the Spider-Verse movie.
Yeah.
The new one is, I'm going to get my prepositions wrong, but like,
okay.
Is it? It's not Into the Spider-Verse. That was the first one.
Yeah, that was the first one.
This one is...
It's across the Spider-Verse. Yeah.
And then
to the other side of the Spider-Verse.
Yes.
And that's the...
And back again. A Hobbit story.
No, the third one is supposed to be beyond the Spider-Verse, right?
Right. Whatever that means.
Oh, well, we'll find out in the third
one. That is the question I've had, like, looming for Marvel in the last several years is, when once you've gone multiverse, what's beyond that? And maybe they'll answer that question.
My thing with those movies is that they say spider twice in the title. Like,
yeah.
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse?
Yeah, I mean, fine. But like, it's like a little pet peeve I have in mind. Like, I've been recently watching some Stargate. Mm. And the main show in that franchise is Stargate 1.
Yes, it's like ATM machine.
Yeah, a little bit.
Or chai tea.
Yeah. And I'm like...
Not red.
It's like, you're putting a lot on the line here, folks. Yeah. Can you maybe spend 5 more minutes on this?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's it. But you like the movie.
I really, yeah. I mean, I knew I would. Like, I had some good reports from other folks who had seen it.
Yeah.
When they were like, you got to see it in theaters before it leaves. So we have a tiny, tiny little theater. I don't know, tiny, tiny. It's like a 2-screen theater in the neighborhood. Sure. It does not have the reclining seats.
Yeah.
But then also, like, the tickets are cheap. Well, relatively.
Yeah. You know? Is it the Plaza?
No, it's...
Because there's the Grandview?
I don't know.
Well, there's a few.
There's a few
around, in the neighborhoods.
Tiny guy,
local
tiny
flavor,
guy.
Everybody.
Local flavor. It was.
I love the Grandview. The upstairs at the Grandview. Favorite place.
It does have an upstairs, but like it's not a whatever.
It's definitely not the Plaza because the Plaza's cheaper than that.
No.
Upstairs.
It was. Yeah. It's anyway. Mm-hmm. Someday I'll show it to you. Yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
So Stephen, you asked earlier, but we wanted to save it for the show. If Ellen agrees with our assessment, the ending of the movie.
Yes.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. Okay, I've paused.
Yep.
You can skip now.
Mm-hmm.
So the ending of the movie, skip now. It's the last chance.
Okay.
The ending of the movie.
Someone will have skipped and then they'll reach this point.
Yeah.
So you gotta skip like a minute or two ahead, okay? Because we're gonna drag this out anyway. Right. So it's a cliffhanger.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mind it.
Yeah. That's not even a spoiler. Everybody knows it's part one to part two. We talked about that on the.
I didn't know that.
Yes, you did. You were there. Okay, it's fine.
I flushed
you
it
didn't
in my
mind.
Memory.
You didn't mind the cliffhanger, so you didn't agree with me and Mark, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't mind it. I didn't.
All that buildup, no spoiler at all.
But here's the thing. There's a cliffhanger. Fine, whatever. I did not mind the ending.
I didn't remember that it was going to be a cliffhanger, so that would have spoiled me.
Oh, okay, fair enough. All right.
And it might have been because I've been watching Silo, the show.
Mm.
And they did a rude cliffhanger at the end of one episode.
Oh.
It was very offensive. Like, the audience is dumb, cheap trick kind of cliffhanger.
Since you mentioned that show to me, I haven't watched it. Mm. I have watched it. So which episode are you talking about?
It's, I think, 7? End of episode 7?
I should have known when I asked that. I don't remember. This is your live show. I don't remember which one you're talking about.
Yeah. Spoilers for Silo. Jump ahead.
Okay. Well, I guess I don't get to jump ahead. It's fine.
Do you want to step out of the room, Steven?
No. It's too much effort. Go ahead.
She jumps over the side of the railing.
Oh, yeah. And it's kind of a non-issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I spent the entire... Because it's releasing one episode a week. And I was like, oh, sweet. She's going to die.
Actually, on that show, you would believe they'd do it.
Exactly.
Because the first couple episodes are structured.
Okay. Additional
very
spoilers.
Very cleverly.
Yeah. There's some... You get invested and people die in that show.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought she was done for. And I was really excited to see where they were going to take the show next. Because it was such... to me, I was like, that's obviously what happened. And this is such a daring move.
Yeah.
And then the episode starts and like 10 seconds in, it didn't matter. And I'm like, that... You could have ended the cliffhanger with her running away into the door.
Classic serial twist over the cliff.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah, like, literally a cliffhanger.
And then they just show up at the saloon the next serial.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so frustrating. I'm like, really? Like, that's what you came... And then that whole... So I think any cliffhanger that was executed maybe better than that was going to be better for me.
What's your general... I'm just totally pivoting to Silo now. Okay. What's your general feelings on the first season?
I haven't finished it. We have one more episode to watch.
Okay.
One more... Because... Eric and I have been watching it together. We were really into it. And then that happened. And he was like, what the?
Yeah.
And we were both like, well, okay, we're going to read the books now.
It's based on a book series.
Yeah.
And I think that's what lends some of those early episodes, like the structure, the narrative structure, is very clever and very constructed in a way that's not very natural to television, but is works really well as an adaptation. Like it works as a TV show.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking like, oh, this is great. And I don't know if a writer's room for a TV show would have built it this way from jump. So that's kind of neat.
Yeah.
And I liked a lot about that. And I guess I won't spoil the ending or even hint at it, but the thing that kind of disappointed me as I went through it, and I'm probably invested, I think I'll watch the next series, but it's that it started out literary and then it became kind of a YA novel toward the end.
Oh.
And then the end of the season kind of really cements this, like, okay, yep, this is kind of Hunger Games style YA kind of fiction. I was like, all right, I guess I'm still interested. Performances are great. It's really an impeccably designed show visually. The world building is really, really quite good. But I guess my expectations are just a lot lower going forward.
Yeah, I think the beginning of the season was super strong and set expectations really high. And then it just kind of, and it happened around that cliffhanger. It's just like, okay, now it's just another one of these
shows.
It
changed modes in a way.
It felt like it was a different, it felt like a different show.
And I wonder if the books have done that as well.
Yeah, I'm curious about it, which is one of the reasons why I want to read the books. And also because the author like self-published for many years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's like an incredibly wealthy author because these books like blew up and he was really early on the self-publishing game.
Neat.
So I think he's given, I don't know. He gets a lot of money for his books because,
Yeah, it's a rare thing to have the whole meal ticket, right?
Yeah.
That's cool.
So I don't know anything else about him. Hopefully he's not a total jerk face.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really hate it when jerk faces get all the money. It drives me crazy. Yeah. Happens a lot.
Yeah. It's one of the worst things about money.
Right? Yeah, agreed.
Okay, last thing at the top of the show. Ellen, you watched a few episodes of a documentary about the Tour de France, and now you're a sports fan?
It happened to me.
It can happen to you.
Yeah, Eric does triathlons, and he bikes and stuff. And
right.
I can tell you all the differences between triathlon biking and regular cycling, biking. Obviously, I'm not an expert, but he's like watching this documentary on Netflix, and I'm like, what are you watching? And he's like, I'm watching this documentary about the 2022 Tour de France. And like the next 5 seconds, there are like these people falling all over the place and terrible cobblestones and everyone's bleeding. I'm like,
I'm in.
Okay.
I'm in. And then like a couple episodes later, I'm like, all these people have, well, of course they do, but they have names and they have backstories and like there's competition and different rivalries.
Like they're like real people.
They're like real people.
Yeah.
And there's like super, oh my God, the hills in France. I don't even understand. There's freaking mountains there and they have to bike up them. It's crazy. And then there's one guy who goes downhill really fast and you get to watch him go downhill really fast and you're wondering if he's going to wipe out and become a meat crane or go off the side of a mountain. Very exciting.
Ellen discovers sports.
Like
I discovered podcasts.
Basically. So now I'm like.
I mean, not all sports are like secret NASCAR.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's not NASCAR though, right? It's people on bikes.
It's respectable. But still the opportunity for carnage.
Yeah.
It's still the opportunity for carnage. There's like every single episode has at least one total tangled mess where people just crash falls on each other.
The theory That's goes that sports are only interesting in documentary format.
Yeah.
And I'm a heavy subscriber to that. I watched the 30 for 30 ESPN series, And I have never thought that sports were more interesting, pivotal to culture, and important to human history than when I watched those things. And then I watched 5 minutes of any actual sports, and I'm like, sports are dumb. It's a waste of time. Right. Why is anybody interested in any of this nonsense?
Right. Well, and that's the thing. So, like, now, like, a couple times a day, I'm logging on, because the Tour de France 2023 is happening right now.
Oh.
And it started on July 1st.
You've
so
been
like,
watching it, right?
So you're putting this theory
no.
to the test now.
No, what?
No, I'm not watching. Cause
she's going to wait till it's like cut into highlights of people falling down.
Oh, of
pretty
course.
Much.
Okay,
but here's, you're right. So these are all, I didn't know much about the Tour de France because I didn't know much about sports or cycling.
Right.
And, mm-hmm. and there, it's basically every day is another race. It's like every day is like a 100-mile or like a 100-kilometer race.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very intense.
And then they do that for a whole month. It's insane.
I didn't know it was for a whole month.
Right? And it's the same guys. You have your team of eight and that's all you can't sub people in.
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. that's what you get for the whole month.
Yeah, and I always wonder, like, these are logistics that are surely easily discoverable. But I'm like, how do accommodations work? Is there, like, when do you get up? Do people really push their sleep schedules? Is there kind of a gentleman's agreement amongst the racers about, like, you know, because I there have been, just like a lot of sports, like, innovation happens that, like, yeah. really change. Kind of like how speedrunning works, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Suddenly someone discovers a technique and is able to save 7 hours or something. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like something crazy like that.
Yeah.
And I don't remember any of the details of any of that stuff. But I'm like, they all just get in a hotel at night? Where do they have dinner? Like, are they're not all itching to keep going? Like, how do you control that?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, because every like stage of the race is like a different route. It's not like yeah. they necessarily pick up where the previous one ended. They finish mm-hmm. the route. Mm-hmm. They get their bike to their whole team that takes care of the bike. They all get mm-hmm. on a bus and they go to the hotel. And then they sleep, and then they get on the bus, and then they go to the next starting zone. It's nuts. It's crazy. The logistics of it are insane. And, yeah, okay, but it's also, like, every day is then, like, a six-hour ride. I'm not going to watch that on TV. One, I have stuff to do, like, a podcast.
Seems like the least interesting. It feels like the resource management and logistics are way more fascinating than the actual pedaling bit.
Well, you know, when you distill the pedaling bit down to this length of a Netflix documentary episode, then it's perfectly interesting. But, yeah, like, I mean, there's a lot more thinking and planning and strategy than that goes into like the Tour de France teams competing with one another and the individuals competing with one another than I would have expected.
Yeah.
Because my extent of competition in a individual sport like cross country, for example, is go run fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go run fast. And I assumed that bike cycling was go cycle fast, but it's a lot more. There's a lot more to it.
Yeah.
I
mean, even in cross country running, there's a lot more to it. But did you cross country running in like high school?
Or? Yeah.
Yeah. That's, you know, that's like,
it's high school.
You're just doing it because you're impressing a girl or something.
Yeah.
Oh, is that? That's what everyone did, right? This wasn't just me.
1 to 10. How impressed?
Mm-hmm. Not very. That's not a number, but anyway.
Cross country is a difficult sport to spectate, so it's not a great one for impressing.
Yeah.
Anyone.
I got last at most of my races.
Yeah.
So I guess one.
I get you.
All right.
We have topics and stuff,
we
right?
We got topics.
Yeah. Okay, so early... just getting my bearings after that epic meta. Early in the show's history,
mm-hmm.
we talked about the Quantic Foundry's gamer motivation profile.
Yes.
Yep.
Which is a thing that listeners, we'll put the link in the show notes. Mm-hmm. It's a quiz, takes about 5 minutes. You answer a bunch of questions about what you like in games, and then it gives you kind of like basically a class, a profile of what type of gamer you are.
Yeah.
If you've done the Myers-Briggs personality quiz, it's very similar to that, and that mm-hmm. the questions are similar, and it also imbues a false sense of confidence in the results.
Yeah.
In that you read it and you're like, oh man, it's a little horoscopy,
mm-hmm.
but it is based on the actual information you provide. So
right.
I'm half and half on it in terms of it being a valuable piece of information.
Sure.
Now the company that administers it and they it's a lot a huge data collection for them. So
yeah.
I think it's valuable to them in terms of like demographic studies.
Yes.
And I think that like they can package and sell that data to game publishers in terms of like trend watching and stuff like that. That's all, I'm sure that has use.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little skeptical to the individual use, but it is fun to see what kind of gamer you are in this particular terminology and compare that to other people using the same terminology. Mm-hmm. It is kind of fun. So before the show, just now, after we got back into the building, we each took the test. I've taken it before for the show.
Same here.
Years and years ago. I found my answers were not that different.
Uh-huh.
Some little changes.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if I would have answered them differently or the same as I did now back then if it was a different day back then, you know, day of the week or whatever. But I wanted to talk about it in sense of not just talking a little bit about our the types of gamers we are, because we talk about that a lot on the show, I think, even outside this language. But as a designer, how do you make game systems and mechanics that encourage not just the types of players that are, you know, cataloged here, but just generally?
Yeah.
What is your, because I think one of the things that troubles me a little bit about categorizing gamers this way is the kind of like, then you want to design for an audience or for a niche for a thing. When to me, I don't know, maybe this is a little naive, but I kind of like humans are humans.
Yeah.
Like people, they like what they like and they will sort of like be motivated to, I mean, in a meta sense, to go to the same, have the same things drive them in multiple cases.
Yes.
But I don't believe it's beyond the capacity of a human being to be motivated by the same thing someone else is, just because one person likes Zelda and one person likes Overwatch 2.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and they wouldn't, they don't have any of the same gaming likes in common. I don't believe there's not a third game they could both enjoy and,
well,
and be
absolutely
equally motivated by.
Yeah, that's one of the weaknesses of this thing. Ellen had brought up another form of, like, what was it? There was the killers and the three other ones.
Yeah, Bartlett's player.
Yeah, that was an interesting discussion.
Yeah. And yeah, I think like labeling things in that way is useful from like a scientific point of view, like an academic point of view, but I don't think it's really useful from like a development point of view, largely due to what you were saying. I think like putting players in boxes, especially when your game doesn't necessarily, will definitely not like fit in any one of those boxes neatly. Even if you intend for that, right?
Yeah.
I don't think it's very useful information for a developer from that sense. I think it's more important to like, it is kind of difficult. You don't want to really like imagine your ideal gamer. That's weird. I think what's most valuable, the best way to do this in terms of thinking about like a player's motivation for your game, is to think about what your game is good at, like what things would engage a player, and have the game work towards that and help motivate a player towards enjoying that aspect of a game. And keeping things that would prevent a player from enjoying that aspect of the game away from them. So, like, okay, actually, a good example, I think, is Tears of the Kingdom has, you know, it's a collect-a-thon. You grab a bunch of stuff, and you can throw things, and you pick up a bunch of weapons. And, you know, there's a lot of things you can pick up. And I think there's a lot of players who will enjoy that kind of aspect of it. But there's also a ridiculous amount of menuing that you have to do in that game.
Yeah.
And it's so annoying. I think that like a player would maybe fall off of it if they, you know, have to deal with this menu constantly. So a lot of RPGs that have a bunch of collecting and a bunch of weapons and stuff you can pick up have optimized that in a way that makes it really easy for players to just like go, this is probably the or click a button and it'll optimize like what your weapons and stuff are if you don't want to have to deal with that.
Yeah,
you just want to pick up all the weapons because it's fun to pick up the weapons.
Mm-hmm. But you don't have any room left in your pouch.
Right. Well, then there's a whole thing, I guess. But like, yeah, I think it's like removing the pain points and picking and highlighting the exciting parts to help players, motivate them to keep playing a game or start playing a game.
Yeah, and I mean, the quiz does try to like separate people out into the sort of like the first person shooter types and the RPG types, the people who like menus and don't.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, those aren't even the terms they use, but I think that that's how they get that. They don't really express it in any particular way. Like, do you like to, you know, resource manage or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think that if you're having like friction problems with your UI, it's just going to be worse for people who don't like menus at all.
Well, yes.
It's not, I don't think it's a choice you make necessarily. I think.
No, I think you're right. I think that you're going to have to make sacrifices when you're developing the game. And I think it would, if you want a player to be motivated to collect a bunch of stuff and be able to look at stuff they've collected, you're going to want to make sure to prioritize that, making sure that the UI is not annoying to go through. You don't have to click bajillion buttons to get to anything.
Yeah, I think you did sort of hit on it, like the idea, like it's really just it's possibly a measurement tool.
Yeah.
In like, is this working or not?
Yeah.
And but it goes back to like sort of what I always think about for game design is like, you're not designing for the player.
Yes.
You're designing for what you want it to do.
Exactly.
And if a player who likes that sort of thing isn't responding to it, then that's where you need to adjust.
Right.
It doesn't mean you need to change what you want to do.
Yeah.
But But you know this player likes this. You know this is what you want to do. You just need to connect those two mm-hmm. things. That's kind of hard data to collect and act on, though, right?
Yeah. Yes. I don't know how to collect that data. I don't have any guides for that other than playtesting.
Well, let's talk a little bit about our results here, mm-hmm. and we can sort of see how seriously we want to take some of it. I think mine was a little bit contradictory. It isn't that much different than it was 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. But of the nine categories it puts you in, it calls me a bard. My motto is playing a part in a grand story, which I immediately object to. Mm. I think because I answer a lot of the narrative, like I want complicated stories, I want rich backgrounds, like I'm that kind of person.
Yeah.
But I'm also really happy when that stuff is implied rather than expressly done. Mm-hmm. But I want there to be a lot under the surface,
sure.
whether I see it or not. There was no way I could tell this quiz that.
Yeah.
So it ended up just thinking that I love narrative games, which isn't really true. I think the more focused you are on a narrative at the cost of play, the less interesting your narrative is.
That's fascinating. Yeah. You bristling up against it being not liking narrative games because you don't play narrative games, but you talk about stories all the time.
Right.
So I find that I just find that interesting.
Well, because like
I don't find that contradictory at all. I just find that interesting. Yeah.
I think this is the thing. This is a general criticism I have of games.
Yeah.
And how they treat narrative as like a component, and rather than like you know like Mario doesn't have a story, but like there's more story in Mario than there is in a lot of visual novels, in my opinion, which is not to knock any form or anything.
Yeah.
But like a visual novel is its own thing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even, I mean, whatever you, people say they're not games, those people can jump off a bridge.
Yeah.
Like, or walk, take a long walk off a short pier or whatever.
Yeah.
But what I mean to say is the narrative I'm interested in is narrative told through gameplay.
Sure. Right.
And so I want a lot of that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, games that are just really story heavy generally don't have that.
Right, because they just tell you a story and you don't get to participate, really. Yeah.
I don't even mind, like, 10-minute cutscenes. That's fine, too. It's like, I don't know, maybe I'm making it more nuanced than it really is. But I think the way it's describing me is, like, really, like, immersion. And I like to be in a grand story that emerges from a community of players and be whisked away into another world.
Right,
I don't like that at all.
That's a specific type of narrative.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of a problem with how we describe games in general.
Yeah.
And how we think about, we talked about this in an episode on genre. Mm. Like, when we talk about like narrative genre, the very, very constrained definitions that we apply to games that we don't in other mediums.
Yes.
Which is very weird to me.
Mm-hmm. It's quite odd.
Well, anyway, that's all my complaints about mine. I mean, I've got more, but let's move on, Steven.
Yeah.
Any headlines that you've seen from your results?
You know, honestly, mine haven't changed that much. Mm-hmm. I apparently like mastery more than I did in the past. And I didn't realize that I like social so much, but I like it less now, which does track, I think.
Yeah.
Old and cranky now.
Yeah. Old and cranky. Mm-hmm. They gave me Acrobat, which is like a solo player who primarily wants to take on challenging gameplay, and they want to practice over and over again until they take on the most difficult missions and bosses in the game, mm-hmm. which totally tracks with me.
Cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just the actual distribution. Seems weird, a little weird, but like, you know, it works. Yeah, and
what is your mastery percentage?
It's at 47%.
Okay, so my mastery is at 67%.
What?
Which, the way we talk about games doesn't track for either of us.
Yeah,
it seems to be flipped around, right?
Uh-huh.
I think it's just because the way they describe it. Like, I answer all the, like, I love heavily strategic games. I love thinking a long time before making a decision.
Mm-hmm.
I love solving complicated puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
And so it interpreted that as long with a lot of mastery.
Yeah.
But I also answer all the questions of like, no, I don't want to spend, I don't want to play the game more than I have to.
Yeah.
No, I don't want to, you know, practice to get good.
Yeah.
Uninterested. Yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah.
And it still thinks that mastery is like, it's my highest score.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really curious how they, you know, determine all that stuff. Cause yeah, I definitely, cause we talk about mastery in different ways, but I think that we've kind of, as a collective here in the clubhouse, we agree that I'm the one who likes
right. The most. But also, it's like more complicated than that. And I think you and I both have a more nuanced approach to it.
Yeah.
That is essentially, we're like Captain Kirk confusing the android here.
Yeah.
We're kind of giving it contradictory information that it's not prepared to accept.
Yes.
And so the results, and this is probably true for a lot of people, maybe true for game designers most specifically.
Mm.
Like, this might not be a problem unique to us.
That's true.
And that we're like trying to give it answers that are too detailed.
Yeah.
Really, it's just like, no, just gives the broad impressions. Thank you.
Yeah. Ellen, how did yours go?
nothing here will be surprising.
Yeah.
Okay.
I must have figured out. I must be talking on the Androids level because it told me I'm a bounty hunter.
Ah, wow.
Gamer type.
Just like Samus.
Yeah, pretty much. Gamer type motto, high octane solo world exploration.
Hmm.
Check.
Yep.
Check.
Yep.
Check. Bounty hunters are solo action-oriented explorers who want game worlds they can make their own through customization and discovery. They also enjoy power progression and unleashing mayhem. So,
yeah. That's Ellen to a T.
Basically, the rest of the page is various percentages of explosions.
Right, right. your overall, this is the sort of six-dimensional shape that it goes outward the more you are in the six categories.
Mm-hmm.
And yours is pretty, you have a big area.
And
I think it's kind of a nice metaphor. It's like there are many games that you like because they would fit in that space.
Yeah.
Mine's a little more constrained.
Same.
Yours is like a tiny little butterfly.
Yeah. But, you know, of course, it's a useful metaphor insofar that the arrangement of these in 3D space changes how like, pinched the shape is.
Yeah.
So maybe it's not totally fair, but it's a rough guide. Yours does remind me, Ellen, of Martha's when we did this 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Martha's was like, all games, please.
Yes, pretty much.
And I think I think you fall into that category a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty, of the six different axes here, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I am lowest on mastery.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And it takes a particular type of game for me to want to get mastery of it.
Hmm.
And for most games that are quite big, if there is part of it that hooks me, it'll on the mastery component, it'll be like one aspect of the game.
Yeah.
You know, so and sometimes I'm really into achievements and sometimes I'm not. Mm-hmm. But always into explosions. Always. And exploring, you know? Like,
yeah.
I will find every single little... I found all the puzzles. In Metroid Dread, I found all the little guys. I've talked about this.
Yeah.
I found them all. I just didn't get them all.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's okay. I found
that's
them
good
all.
Enough, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got credit.
We feel pretty much identical about this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in Zelda, I'm still not using the left ZL to target enemies.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't have to.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, combat's not that hard in that game.
Mm.
And I find myself like, every now and again, I'm like, oh, it'd be really interesting. Oh, I can lock on. It's like the most basic mechanic.
Yeah.
They teach you right away.
Yeah.
You should be using all the time.
It's been like that since the Wii.
Yeah. But like, I just never feel the need to. And then I've developed a habit to it, even though it would make the game a lot easier because I'm just not interested in mastering that.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah. But I remember also playing the nonsense out of Thoth.
Yeah.
Mm, right.
But that is the
talking about that.
Pretty much the only thing you can do in that game is just like beat your head against the shapes.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's what it comes down to where I get a little bit frustrated by like gamer types, because there are definitely like certain games that require a lot of like twitch reflexes that I love.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are games where that have those things and I'm not interested.
Yeah.
And I think that it's all types of games can work.
Yeah.
But I think the amount of games of a particular type that are in my like catalog of favorites, I think is solely a function of how many of those games have come out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not so much
my,
you know, and also like the ones that came across my eyes while browsing the internet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I feel like so many convolution of factors.
Mm-hmm.
I think of like games, types of things I would have, but every time I talk about it, I start contradicting myself immediately.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like these like quizzes and things are like, what kind of eater of food are you?
Yeah.
What foods do you like? It's like, that's such a huge question. And it kind of feels like, it's like, okay, you said you like Doritos, therefore you must like salt. In everything? And you're like, no, not in everything. And they're like, but you said you like Doritos and you like Cheetos and you like Fritos. So you must like salt. Like, no, I like salt on my chips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, but I don't like it on my cereal.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's cereal.
Yeah.
It's different.
And I think that thinking does kind of infect game dev circles when we talk about types of things. Because very often we think about inspired by other types of games and what they do and how they accomplish those things.
Yeah.
And I think we're a little bit too quick to mimic those things to achieve that end.
Yes.
And I think some of that comes from the fact that like it's proven to work on these players and not realizing there's like 10 other variables that will impact your execution.
And that's, I guess that's basically why I was arguing against trying to garner your game towards a particular type of player and just focus on enhancing what is good about the game.
So
that the player, whatever type, enjoys your game will come flocking towards it.
Yeah. Right. It's definitely a question for market research and promotion.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of like know your audience that is very, I think, an unchallenged best practice in indie dev is to like you know, when you're trying to pitch to a publisher, they'd want a slide on who's this for.
Yes.
And as a developer, I've never felt qualified to answer that question. Mm-hmm. And I still kind of bristle against the notion that it's my problem.
Yeah. Actually, that is a very good point, though. I am not a marketer, so maybe my advice is not good for that particular
Well, it's definitely somebody's problem. Mm-hmm. But as a game designer, I don't think it's my problem.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I guess there's an argument to be made that, like, being engaged with that can inform your design. But someone would have to make that case to me. Mm. I'm not ready to completely dismiss it, but I don't know. Yeah, I don't think it's my problem.
I'm going to keep digging into this food metaphor because, I don't know, food can be a great metaphor for everything, but it's like, okay, you got this dessert going. Okay, you got this dish going. You say it's a dessert. That's great. Mm. What about the people who like salt? And you're like...
We have a list of them. Ellen, you're on that list.
They'll like this dessert. It just doesn't have salt in it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, but they really like salt. So you have to have some salt in there. Yeah. Like, well, I can sprinkle some on the top to make it pretty.
Yeah.
Like, we'll sell it. Great. I don't know.
I think there's probably some benefit to, like, for someone in marketing to work with a designer to help them market the game. Because the designer helped determine what is good about the game, right?
Yeah.
So, like, somebody can, like, spin that into a way that can make it more exciting. Because I think, you know, as game designers, we're artists, but we're also, like, regimented in some ways.
Yeah.
Which is not something that will portray to a player what's good about it. We did all that work to make the game feel good. We didn't do all that work to make the game sound good to, like, to maybe play if you wanted to.
Well, and you started getting the data-driven mobile game kind of, like, how to hook people. And then you start getting into Skinner box territory.
Right, that's different, too.
And it's like, well, I mean, what does success mean in terms of this is a successful game that people like? Mm-hmm. And then you start like, well, where's the artist in all of this?
Yeah.
And so, but that's a real, real fuzzy, fuzzy line.
Yes.
Very wide.
That's true.
So it's like you can be in the middle of that line and making, like, smart decisions about your game in the marketplace without feeling like you're, like, giving yourself over to that kind of thinking.
That's true.
Or you could cross that line where you start conflating that, my players from early access are really responding to this tweak I'm making. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it's good game design. Mm-hmm. Like, that's such an easy trap to fall into, I think.
Absolutely.
It's tricky. Mm-hmm. So, like, I guess buyer beware maybe is the what I'm coming down from this. It's a very it's a very unfocused topic. We were locked out of the building today, folks. Yeah, can't expect much from me.
It's fine. Oh, it was also hot. We didn't mention that. It was hot.
Hot.
So, you know.
What else excuses us for this, like, this casual episode?
We were hungry. And so then we ate really fast, and now we're, like, food coma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we were trapped outside holding our food. It hadn't started raining yet, but it was going to soon. Yeah. We could have just started eating, and we didn't.
Yeah. No, we didn't want to because you were on the phone.
Yeah.
I thought about it. Also, I realized I had very salty food, and that explains a lot.
Well, there we go.
I've heard you like salt.
People tell me I like salt.
Yeah.
And explosions.
We've got a lot of stuff on our Patreon.
Yeah.
A lot of cool things.
So much.
So much. It's actually a lot of content. You know, when you actually start and think about it, it's a lot of content.
There's a lot out there, yeah.
There's ad-free episodes. Those are relatively new, but we've been doing this for a little while now, so you've got a lot of cool ad-free episodes that you can listen to.
And you don't have to, like, log into Patreon to do it. You get a special RSS feed, load it into however you listen to podcasts, and you get this show minus ads.
Yes. There's also Patreon exclusive content,
one
of which is Ellen's Docs. There's a bunch of pictures of Ellen's Docs.
There's probably other places you can find that. I imagine they're all over the place.
Yeah, but these are exclusive.
But it's a nice curated exclusive batch.
Yes.
For sure.
Exactly. There was that one time when Ellen went through Mark's stuff and talked about it. That was cool.
Oh, that was cool.
That was pretty good.
There was one time when Ellen forced us to watch a video and we discussed it for a little while. That was something.
Yeah.
We have all of our robust and working episodes in there.
Yeah.
We have a bunch of, like, I think we were, like, fixing a thing in the clubhouse and we were, like, playing our old games that we did during our game jams.
Yeah, that was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Things. We did it for our 200th a long while back.
That's right.
We did an extra segment that Dale, and if you like this show enough to support it, you're probably interested in how we run it.
Yeah.
And we maintain some of our behind the scenes stuff. We don't want to hide anything from our regular audience.
Right.
Don't, you know, make no mistake. But if you want to learn a little bit more about our thoughts on making the show, some extra content that sort of digs into a little bit deeper into our minds as designers, lots of really good stuff on there.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's say I have how many bucks would I need to get access to that stuff?
Actually, you only need one, right?
I I think. It's really cheap.
It's really cheap.
It's practically nothing.
Patreon.com.
At any level, we have tiers.
We do have tiers.
But that's all just a facade.
Yeah.
You give us a little money, you get all your stuff.
Exactly.
Stuff. Yeah.
$2.50.
$2.50.
That's the starting tier. I think you can give us less, though.
Possibly.
Yeah, we're making it real easy for y'all. Go to patreon.com/nicegamesclub. Support today.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, my topic, copying others. What does that mean? Just you taking something that somebody else made and put it in your thing. And
what does that mean?
That's what it means. That's what I'm defining it as. Is you just take
falling into that trap we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. Oh.
I mean, sometimes we, you know, score a double.
Like, yeah. Right. Okay. So yeah, I want to talk about copying others because I think sometimes we'll, you know, a word will have a negative connotation, like cheating, for instance. And it's okay to say you're doing a thing and it have a negative connotation, but it'd be okay in this instance. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about this with respect to.
So it's called special dispensation.
Yeah. I'm talking about this with respect to copying others or, well, not plagiarizing, because I think that has a connotation that it's like illegal and wrong in like an academic sense.
Right, it's the good artist copy, great artist steal.
Yeah,
again, another big fuzzy line.
Yeah. I'm not necessarily saying steal other people's work, but definitely look at other people's work and be like, oh, this is a cool idea. I want this for my game, and then put it in your game. Basically, I'm just trying to say that copying can be good. Just do it right.
Right.
Don't just like literally rip something from like this is what happens, and I think in a lot of spaces is they'll see a game and it'll be this is what happened in previous games that I've worked on.
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying it from experience. They'll look at other games, things that Fortnite's done right. Oh, Fortnite has seasons. They've got some like ranking system and stuff, right? Why don't we put that in our game? We'll put all this work in here and do all this stuff. Turns out we only have 10 players. So the ranking system is crap. It means nothing to anyone who actually tried to make it, you know, good.
Yeah.
We wasted all this time developing all these this feature that nobody is really enjoying. But you could take maybe the idea that Fortnite has these ranks and stuff, and you can put in like a scoreboard or something. That's a lot easier to do for one. It still has that competition between people, so they can keep trying to play the game without having to put in a whole complicated ranking system to get rewards and whatever else every season.
Yeah.
I think it can be valuable to just look at other people's work, and use it. Just like grabbing it and using it for yourself, but you can't literally just grab it and put it in your game. I keep using my hands to grab things.
Now that you understand podcasts, Stephen, let's layer this one other point on it. It's an audio medium.
Oh, is it?
No visuals.
I've been doing it wrong this whole time.
Maybe.
Great, great, cool.
Well, now we can stop covering for him.
Big weight off our shoulders.
So I guess this topic, I wanted to talk about like what is how to copy somebody well, what to copy, what not to copy, those kinds of things. Yeah. I think it's important to, like it's important to like analyze when you're looking at another person's work and you want to use some of the aspects for yourself. Like let's say you're making a deck building game, right? And you look at Slay the Spire because that's what everybody's looking at when they want to make deck building games.
It's a great example of a genre where a lot of copying is happening.
Exactly. So you look at Slay the Spire and you're like, wow, this game's doing deck building well. It's selling a lot of copies. I want to make a deck building game because I like deck building games and I have an interesting idea for it. Instead of being like, well, why don't I just take Slay the Spire and make it set in space? Like, that's not, don't do that. instead, what you should do is go, what do I like about, like, analyze how you enjoy the game, or maybe analyze how other people are enjoying the game. Go like, what do I like about Slay the Spire? What has worked about it? Well, let's see. I don't really like the environment. I want to change that. But I do like the way that the way you get hands and you have to play all the cards in your hand or they just get discarded. Like, that's kind of an interesting thing. Maybe I could twist that into something that's more interesting.
Yeah. But so it's a tapestry, right? You pull the thread, and suddenly, like, I want this thing to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take that, and then, but I don't want that other thing. And like, okay, well, then how? What's the connection between those two things in your source, the source inspiration,
right?
And why is that relevant? Or maybe that why it's like, oh, that was a mistake they made. I will do it differently,
mm-hmm.
or something I disagree with, or whatever. But yeah, you're right. You taking somebody else's idea. And putting it in your game is something you can do and do well.
Yes.
But it is just as hard as coming up with something brand new on your
own. Well, see, that's the thing. When you take something and you decide to make different decisions based off of that, the developers very likely already made those decisions because of various reasons.
It
could have been resources. It might have been that's not the game they wanted to make, whatever. So you coming in and taking it and being like, well, I can make this better by making this one little tweak. Ha ha, I'm so much smarter than the developer.
And then that's, surprise.
Exactly.
Just to be clear, I don't think anyone has that attitude.
No, no one does. Yeah. I don't think it, well.
Some people do, I'm sure.
A few people do. Okay. But very, very few people.
We're not interested in talking to those people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But even, I mean, I don't know, like I've done that a few times, right? Not being like, oh, I'm way smarter than this developer, but being like, I'll take this thing and I'll make a tweak and it'll make it more interesting for me. And I think that'll make it a good game for other people, too, potentially.
Yeah, it's more about fit. Like, oh, okay, they did it this way, but I'm doing this other thing, so maybe this could fit, but only if I do it this other way. But
yes.
Then you have to look at the dependencies in the source
material. Well, it's like Mark was saying. Yeah, it's a tapestry. That's a good way of describing it. Like, when you make those little tweaks, that tweak has, there's ripple effects, and it'll affect butterfly thingy. What's it called? Butterfly effects.
Yeah, butterfly effects.
Right.
It's really hard to say it at 10 o'clock at night.
Uh-huh.
Butterfly effects.
But yeah, I think that like it's just important to recognize what you're grabbing.
Yeah.
And how that change will affect things. And recognize that the developers did make those changes for a reason. And so like you can look at their work and see why they made those changes by analyzing why they did it and by analyzing what you want to copy. And what you don't want to copy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that can be valuable. And I do think it's important. I think it's very valuable to take other people's work and use it for your own work and smartly because it saves you time.
I disagree. I don't think it saves you a half a minute. Like
really?
Yeah, because I think it might, but that's not a successful execution.
Okay.
That's my contention, I guess.
Okay.
Is that, which isn't to say you can't make a knockoff that's also fun.
Sure.
I mean, like that is, I mean, I think many examples have proven
mm-hmm.
and many and beloved examples of that are, that you know, are maybe lesser quality, but still great.
Yeah.
So that's not what I mean.
Okay.
What I mean is that if your goal is to try to save time, that's not a good way to do it. I don't think.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I think it's probably a case by case basis.
Yeah, but I do kind of agree with Mark. I think that I misspoke when I said that it saves you time. I guess it saves it.
Well, there's like something's proven out.
Yes.
And so you don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Right.
There's a little bit of that going on.
That's what it is.
Yeah. That's
it helps. It gives you a starting point.
Yeah.
In a way that that will maybe save you time.
Honestly, that I think now I'm on your side with it because I mean from that from that angle, right?
Yeah.
The hardest thing to do is to start to pick a spot and then go in a direction.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so if you're starting from, I mean, it's ultimately arbitrary.
Yeah.
Like where your initial thinking is and then which direction you go.
Yeah.
It's like you can't make the right choice because mm-hmm. there's so many other variables yet to be defined.
Yeah.
So if you're just picking some other design, some other solved solution,
yeah,
and then starting to tweak, I mean, that will, I guess that saves you time getting started.
Yes.
I don't know that it saves you time.
Yeah,
get where you're going.
Right. Yeah. When I said save you time, I don't mean that it saves you time during the development process because it's still a lot of work to develop a game, regardless of where. Yeah, it's just always hard.
Yeah.
But I do think it. Yeah, it gives you a starting place in a way that I think can be very valuable and save you a bunch of meetings to figure out what the heck you want to do. I think.
Yeah. I guess it prevents you from wasting time wasting unproductive time.
Yes.
I suppose.
Yes. Yeah. Because I think it's valuable to know what you do want to do and know what you don't want to do. And if you can figure all that stuff out right away by going, oh, Slay the Spire is cool, but it looks ugly or whatever.
Yeah.
Then you could be like, but I want to make something like that. Then you can be like, I'll take these things and not take these things. And then I have a starting place. And then all of a sudden, oh, maybe some of the stuff in Slay the Spire does work actually. And, you know, then you can make decisions based off of that and have conversations around that versus just starting at, I want to make a deck builder. And then you're like, what does deck builder mean? And you got to define what that means. And that's a whole thing. Yeah.
I mean, if you speak in that language of like, of mechanics and mm-hmm. like sort of pick off the shelf and then mix together.
Yeah.
Like you're baking a cake or whatever.
Yeah.
That's, I think, but I think for me, the reason I'm having a little bit of difficulty with this as something to get excited about.
Yeah. Okay.
Is because I don't, that's not how I think of that's not the language I use as a designer necessarily. So like those aren't my building blocks.
That's fair.
Which isn't to say that they can't be for other people.
Well, okay.
Right? Like, I don't mean to say that it's bad. It's a little alien to me.
So, okay. So Metro Nexus, right?
Right. That's it. I was going to ask you about the examples of yours because Metro Nexus is a very specific homage to a specific game.
Yeah.
And so less of like ingredients from things and more like, this is a cool idea for a game. It's mm-hmm. kind of a bad game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take its premise and do it.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know if that's dead on what you're describing.
Yeah, I think that's a lot. It isn't the way that you copy. It doesn't have to be the game itself. Yeah. It can be like a premise.
And definitely the starting from, in the case of like how characters handle in that game,
mm-hmm.
it was meant to sort of evoke the feeling of what would it be like if this game was actually fun to control.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there was... I mean, I didn't even have a copy of City Connection when I started working on Metro Nexus.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a lot for me to actually look at. Mm. It was mostly just hazy memories.
Sure.
So to me, I think of much more of an inspiration, even though it's very much a ripoff. It's like it's an homage, very specifically meant to remind you of that.
Yeah.
But maybe it's just because my process is different. I never thought of it as...
Well, like you said, the line is fuzzy.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm kind of arguing that saying that you copy somebody else isn't necessarily a negative thing. You just take
right,
flat out, and that's fine. Just like with cheating, I'm saying it again because eventually, when we get to cheating part two, I'm gonna that will be my theory.
Here we go.
Is cheating is fine, but just recognize you're doing it. I think that's basically my main point. Is like I think it's okay to copy other people, but
that as the sort of thesis statement is like. Originality is overrated.
Yes.
Novelty is overrated.
Yep.
There's hazards towards just lifting things,
mm-hmm.
but like, who cares if you came up with it?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to come up with something that's completely novel.
Yeah.
Yes.
And even so, like, people will be able to trace the genealogy of that execution.
Yeah. Simpsons did it first.
Well, also, what's new is interesting because you have never experienced it before. So as a player, it can open up a new experience because all your preconceptions are yet to be built.
Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating, but it only lasts so long.
Right. Exactly.
So like, that's fine. There is value to it,
mm-hmm.
but it's like it's fleeting value.
Yes.
Right.
By its very nature.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. If that's a weight on your shoulders, like, be freed of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. If you want to look to another domain of creation that's not food, for an example, you can look at the 4-chord song, right? Like the 1-5-6-4. Or something, I can't remember exactly. There's like a whole bunch of spoofs on there where you like string a bunch of songs together that all have the same chord progressions.
Yeah.
anyway. And it's people have been using that for really long time, and they'll keep using it because it works and it's fun.
And yeah? Finding new ways to do it.
Exactly. Right. Finding new ways to make it fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Like, I think the only thing I've had a difficult time with throughout this conversation is the word copy. It just doesn't, when I feel like copy, it feels like something you're just like straight up copying or cloning or whatever.
Yeah, if at the end of your process you say this is a copy, then you've not done your copying correctly, maybe.
Well, are we talking about copying or are we talking about inspiration?
See, now we gotta go to Steven and say, what do you mean by that,
it's
man?
It's copying. It's the same thing. Oh, that's okay. What I mean.
Cool. All right.
He's not letting us get all
no
hippy dippy with it.
That's what I think that sometimes we use words that make them sound better than they actually are.
Yeah.
I think like you were inspired by City Connection. Like it's not. I also think that you copied some of the work that City Connection, not the work, copied some of the.
A lot of work that went into that game. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, you copied the premise of it.
Yeah, and I've always been really open about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's something I appreciate about that.
And I think part of it is in the case of Metro Nexus, that is part of the core pillar of that game.
Yeah.
That it's supposed to be City Connection, but modern.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of why, like, without that, it is nothing.
Yeah.
So it's not that it was meant to be like a knockoff of it. It's meant to be a specific lineage to that.
Yes.
So I don't know if that's just semantics at this point.
Well, that's, I guess, part of what I'm arguing is it's just semantics. You're copying. It's fine. That's my point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe, I guess that's the thing to think about is if it's something that's worth it, it's such a strong inspiration, something that really, really, then like think about making it into a core pillar, thinking about making it. Like, instead of just, like, using it to get a kickstart onto your project, like, think about, you know, what value that is to your entire design.
Yeah.
And how important that is to maintain as you tweak things around it.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
That's our show. For show notes and links on today's topics, go to our website, nicegames.club. Visit us on Twitter and Mastodon at nicegamesclub, where Dale tweets and toots about game dev resources and... a cat giving a dog a massage.
Pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta be cute. Okay, I'm getting nods. Audio medium, guys. We like hearing from you, so tweet and toot back. Or email us, contact@nicegames.club. We are on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. And if you want to keep things more casual, just stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello. Next week, we'll be interviewing Anna Webster about narrative design. Ooh, I'm excited. But that's it for this week.
So, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice. Yeah, so that's that. That's Spider-Verse and Silo.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still playing that horse game.
Yeah. Read off some of the names of those horses.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, let me pull them up. That has been one of the...
that's
of
my
the...
primary interest in Alan honestly, this horse Sam. Game.
The
listeners may remember we've talked a little bit about silly horse names.
I don't know if I showed this on, or talked about this on the show, but Ellen showed us pictures because, you know, she's showing us these fancy horse game names.
Mm-hmm.
And the game looks... It bothers me how much that game looks so much like that horse racing game I was working on.
They did a PC. There's a PC version, a desktop version. I don't know if that makes a difference.
No.
Okay.
It doesn't. Well, our game was supposed to be a mobile game.
Oh, so. Okay. All right. Well, this is a mobile game.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it just freaks me out. It's all. Every time you show the screen, I'm like, oh, did I work? Oh, no, I didn't. Anyways.
Okay. Let's get some names. Some good horse names. Yep. I don't know how they're generated, but they're all fantastic.
It does feel like it's you picking from two lists, but it's not. It's just random horse names.
Yeah.
It's super. And you can change the horse names, right? So, like, you're not stuck with things like... Vertigo Bassoon.
That's my favorite one.
There's some really good ones. Jaunty Haggis is a really good one.
Uh-huh.
Clever.
Anger Anagram. See, sometimes I wonder if someone didn't pick some of these because Anger Anagram is just too good.
Yeah.
You know? I think Flotsam Foghorn is also great. There might be some weighting towards alliteration and whatever algorithms they have.
Yeah.
Let's see. Bassoon Charisma, like bassoons, apparently.
Yeah.
Colossal Cat.
Colossal Cat. Bassoon Charisma. That one, really good. That's a little. That's a bit of a thinker. And I'm like,
bassoon charisma.
That's good.
You really don't think of the bassoon as a charismatic
exactly.
instrument. I have heard the bassoon played charismatically.
I would say, ironically, when I hear that name, I think it's the bassist in a ska band is named that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. That's part of why that name is so great.
I don't have woodwinds in a ska band.
I know you don't, but that's what that guy's name is.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. All right. Yeah, for sure. Lord of the Space.
Pretty good.
Lord of the Space.
Lord of the Space.
Hamster Format.
Oh, that's good.
There are three more that I want to mention.
We're cutting this and putting it at the end of the show, right?
Yeah.
Some of it. Shadow Wax was pretty good.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Kind of like Shadow Fax, right? Yeah, like, I was like, oh, okay. Someone had to have picked that, too.
Yeah.
Flatulent Fragment. I don't know how.
I mean, it's all kinds of humor, I guess.
Yeah. And then my personal favorite, Stone.
Worth 2 stone.
Yeah, it's a tough horse.
Stone.
Oh, that's great.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.